Afternoon. The Judiciary and Public Safety Omnibus Budget Conference Committee will come to order. We are going to spend today learning about the respective positions of the House and the Senate and fleshing out any questions that we have, try to make sure that we are well informed. As the members may already know, there is not yet an official Senate position on the public safety lines that are within our jurisdiction because the Senate has not passed the Transportation and Public Safety Finance Bill yet. So we will informally get information on that, but nothing is official until the Senate passes our bill. And the other thing is, and I think every conference committee's got to deal with this, we obviously don't have any targets yet. And since our bills have very little policy and are almost all finance, we can't really make any decisions until we know what money we have available to fund our budget. So I think we'll make the best use of our time as we can and educate ourselves.
We don't have any money.
And decide if there are any other areas of information that we want to learn more about before we can get down to the nitty-gritty of decision-making, and then we'll bide our time until we get more information, the targets, and we can make some decisions. So just so members of the audience understand, we're going to go until 4:30 today, and then we will have to adjourn. I anticipate our agenda is one that we can easily accomplish in that time. I understand the House is still in session, and if you need to leave to go vote on the floor, just let us know. We'll take a pause so that you can do that. The Senate has adjourned for the day, so we are at the beck and call of this conference committee and other conference committees that are going on at the same time. So at this point, members, you have in your packets the spreadsheets, the side-by-sides, the agenda, and copies of the bills themselves. So we are going to ask the staff to start by taking us through the spreadsheets. And Mr. Turner, did you want to start? All right, Mr. Turner, tell us what we need to know.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, members, I'll be going over the spreadsheet dated April 30th, timestamp 10:15. It contains in the House side the Judiciary Budget Bill authored by Representative Hillstrom.
Sure. I believe my spreadsheet is 950. Just depends on when it was printed. I sent a PDF over, and they probably printed it at that time. It should be the same.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, as I said, the spreadsheet contains the House Judiciary Budget Bill authored by Representative Hillstrom and the House Public Safety Budget Bill authored by Representative Paymar. On the Senate side, we have the Judiciary Budget Bill authored by Senator Latz. And as Senator Latz stated, what's not included in the spreadsheet are the appropriations of the six criminal divisions of the Department of Public Safety. They're presently in Senator Dibble's transportation bill, which is in the Senate Tax Committee. I guess I'll go over how we read this thing. The spreadsheet lists the recommended appropriations for the 14 and 15 biennium from the governor to the Senate to the House. And then on the right-hand side, there's a column titled Conference that at this time simply lists the base budgets for the agencies under this committee's jurisdiction. Tails will be determined by decisions taken by the committee and will be added at a later time. Finally, how we read this agency by agency, the first line is the agency's base budget. It's followed by agency decision items, if any, in the shaded gray area, and then the agency total. So I will start with the Supreme Court.
By the way, members, if any of you have any questions as we're going through it, Mr. Turner, you're okay with us just interrupting with questions, I assume. I'd rather do that while the topic is in front of us rather than circle back in a half an hour and deal with it then. So jump right in if you have any questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members. Starting on line 3, Supreme Court operations, we have $61.5 million base budget. The governor recommended $2,450,000 for employee salary and health insurance increases. It comes to about a 3-3 raise for Supreme Court employees. The Senate and the House both concurred with the governor's recommendation. The next line is the judge's salary. We've got it listed as titled as 4% for the Senate and 3% for the House. It's actually, once you take out the state share, the judge's share of the pension costs, it nets out to 3 the first year for the Senate and 4 the second. And for the House, it's 2 the first year and 3 the second. Next line is the state share of the judge's pension increase. I believe this is being carried in the House in the pension bill. In the Senate, Senator Latz was told to include it in his bill. Then the next
two. On that point, we're not sure in the end what the big agreement will be with regard to where we should be carrying the pension items. So that's in there now because that's what we were supposed to do. But we'll find out by other powers where in the end we're going to track that.
Mr. Chairman, members, the next two lines, 8 and 9, related to the to Senate File 235, Senator Latz's gun bill. It's all data collection costs. The first line, the integration project, is money to assist the Supreme Court in getting certain gross misdemeanor data and diversion data to the BCA and to the National Criminal NCIS or NICS. The next line, line 9, it's titled 1994 to 2008, MI Reach Back, that's mentally ill reach back. It's getting court data on civil commitment to the BCA and to NICS.
Members, just so you all understand it and the public understands, these in the Senate, we split our gun safety bill into two parts, the policy-only provisions, which are in Senate File 458, which are now at the Senate Rules Committee, and Senate File 235, which had some fiscal impact that went through the finance process. Senate File 235 is the companion bill to Senator Lesch's bill in the House. At least in terms of the substantive content, my belief is that these are essentially non-controversial provisions, but there are differences in whether and how to fund them, and we can certainly get into discussions, but just so you understand sort of the lay of the land on that stuff. So when you see the entrances here under gun bill, and there are a few other lines also that refer to it, that helps you put it into context.
Mr. Chairman, members, we skip down then to line 13, civil legal services. They have a base appropriation of $22,032,000. The governor recommended a $1 million caseload reduction appropriation. The Senate recommendation is for $2.5 million in caseload reduction. And the House agrees with the governor at $1 million, but it breaks it out $920,000 for straight caseload reduction and an additional $80,000 for family law legal services. We have the total of the Supreme Court, which is just operations and civil legal. So we move on to the Court of Appeals. Line 22, they have a base budget of $20,456,000. The governor recommended employee salary and health insurance increases. The salary increase is 3-3 again at $692,000. The Senate and the House both concur with the governor on that item. Then we have the judges' salaries again within the Court of Appeals itself. Again, it's 3-4 net for the Senate and 2-3 net for the House. Then the Appeals Court judge reimbursement, this is a House-only provision which provides housing and travel and per diem, I believe, for Appeals Court judges. Then we have the state share judges' pension increase. Once again, it's carried in the Senate bill and not in the House bill. On to the next page, we have district courts. Base budget of $473,656,000. The governor recommended $21,806,000 for employee salary and health insurance increases, again, 3-3. The Senate came in very close to the governor, 21,306,000, as did the House. They're both 500 down from the governor. Next line is judges' salary increases, again, 3 and 4 for the Senate and 2 and 3 net for the House. The next line is a House-only provision, $1,850,000 for additional specialty court funding. Next line.
By the way, I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you, Mr. Turner, but just while we're on these topics, if any members of the House want to explain a provision in a little more detail so we understand the context while we're at that line, feel free to jump in and do that.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Paymar.
Maybe if Representative Hillstrom wouldn't mind, I wouldn't mind her or someone saying how many specialty courts will be funded under the House provision here. I just can't remember from our...
Mr. Turner has specific information, if Representative Hillstrom.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner.
Representative Paymar, I believe the Supreme Court told me that the additional cost for each specialty court is roughly $180,000 per year. So we'd be looking at, 5 courts over the course of biennium. But maybe you've...
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding that there may be some issues with current funding, and so the fiscal note that came back said that we may get 2 additional courts, but we may actually have to save some of the current courts, as I believe the language that came back in the fiscal note.
You mean backfilling or filling in for expiring federal grants that are helping to fund current courts?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, members, next line is 38, House File 80, Representative Hillstrom, Guardians and Conservators, $61,000 each year to the court system. This is Senate File 7 in the House. It's in the Human Services Conference Committee. Next line
is... Representative Hillstrom or Mr. Turner, is the policy language carried in this budget bill then for that particular provision?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman and
Mr. Turner.
Members, once again on line 39, last time you'll see it, the state share judges pension increase. We move to the guardian ad litem board, $24,134,000 base budget. The governor recommended an increase of $1,036,000, and both the Senate and the House concur. Tax court, a base budget of $1,650,000. The governor had recommendations of 2 law clerks for $260,000, continuing legal education for $50,000, and Westlaw access for $12,000. Both the Senate and the House concurred with the governor's recommendation. In addition, the House gave the tax court a small agency salary increase of, $21,000. And then finally, a Senate-only provision, line 57, case management system support costs. Their information system is obsolete and needs replacement.
Can I ask someone from the House to help me understand the basis for the base adjustment salary increase of 1% and 1%?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we gave agencies that were not pass-through agencies, that were not the court, or the public defenders a 1% increase to help defer the cost of salary and health insurance. And so that was part of the target that we were given, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, we did the same on non-DOC agencies within our division.
Representative Hillstrom, what do you mean by defer the salary?
To help defer the cost that the agency was going to have to pay due to increase in costs.
This is in addition to other base increases or salary provisions?
Mr. Chair, yes. This was above the governor's recommendation. Many of these agencies asked for additional money from the governor. They didn't all make it in the governor's recommendations. And so we incorporated a 1% above the governor recommendation to help take up the cost of insurance, health insurance costs, and salary increases.
Okay. I'm having trouble understanding what you mean by take up the cost.
We were going to pay for it, Mr. Chair.
I mean, are there increased costs that are already like in the pipeline for these agencies, or is it, or they're saying that we'd like to give our employees an additional salary increase, and you opted to provide the funds to accomplish that? Mr. Walls.
Mr. Chair, my understanding of the 1% and 1% is that agencies have bargaining units that negotiate salary increases, and agencies need to absorb those costs. Sometimes that means holding positions open in order to comply with those negotiated increases. There were agencies that did receive salary money in the governor's budget, such as the courts and corrections. It became a House policy to give any agency that was not granted additional money to deal with salaries, just an inflationary increase of 1% and 1% for 14 and 15, based on the general fund salaried positions that they had within the agency.
Mr. Walls, whoever can answer this, they've already got contracts, right?
Mr. Chair, correct.
And so is this 1% and 1%, is that above and beyond what the contracts already provide for?
Mr. Chair.
Were those contracts underfunded in the governor's recommendation?
Mr. Chair, it isn't assumed that the agencies necessarily were underfunded, but that they are operating on slim margins, and therefore this was to help agencies deal with those margins by providing extra money, which they could use rather than having to hold positions open or other things that agencies do when they're faced with increasing salary costs due to negotiations and not provided any inflationary increase in their budget.
I'm sorry, but I'm still not clear, if I may inquire. Do the contracts provide for increases in salary above what the governor provided, or is this money intended to allow the agency to supplement contract
provisions? Mr. Chair, the dollars are not meant to provide any additional money to personnel above what is in the contracts, only to help the agencies with those ongoing costs when they were not granted any inflationary increase in their budget.
Representative Cornish.
Oh, Mr. Chair, having been in a few of these negotiation teams, what usually happens when every 2 years when they come in to bargain, the agencies have the on their own can ask for salary subs from the governor. The commissioner can ask for salary subs. The governor might not give them that, but the agency can still decide to up their contracts, but they have to take it out of their existing budget. Therefore, if the legislature wants to go straight to the agencies and help them out, they can put the money in themselves, even though the governor didn't give them the salary subs that they requested. So, and if they get too crazy with it, then they can get in trouble with the governor, but they can, by using their own resources and taking them maybe from one division, I know I'm in the Division of Enforcement in the DNR, when they would want to give their COs more, they could take it from some other part of the budget in the DNR and give it to DNR enforcement rather than to another one. They do it separately. So that's about the best explanation I can give of it. If they don't get the salary subs they requested from the governor, then the commissioner can still negotiate at the table and give them more, but they'll have to pay for it out of their own agency.
What I'm trying to understand is my understanding is that for the base budgets or the employee, for the base budgets already recognize salary lines that are included in the contracts. Is that not the case? Mr. Walls?
Mr. Chair, without an initiative that gives the agency some sort of inflationary increase, their budget is flat, even though their salary costs and their insurance costs are going up. In the case of corrections, the $38 million they're getting is to provide for employees who already have the contracts agreed to, but without this money, I believe they've testified they would have to lay off upwards of 200 people. Other agencies that do not have those increases provided for in the governor's budget have to deal with them through several different means unless we give them an inflationary increase. And the House proposals to give one and one seek to do that to some small extent.
All right. Well, I think I'm going to want to get some more information on this so that I can fully comprehend it. So, all right. I'll move on, Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, we're on Uniform Laws Commission, which has a base budget of $98,000. The governor recommended a base increase of $35,000 a year and then back dues of $63,000 for a total appropriation of $231,000, and the Senate and the House concurred with the governor's recommendation. Next agency is the Board of Judicial Standards. Base budget of $912,000. The governor has a one-time recommendation of $300,000 for disability and disciplinary hearings. Once again, the Senate and the House concurred. And then there's the House only. It's listed as base adjustment, the small agency salary increase that we just discussed. The next agency is the Public Defense Board. And although it looks like the House and the Senate are very different, they're actually not. The Senate has a recommendation $3.5 million above the governor's recommendation of $8,595,000. And the House has a recommendation $3.8 million above the gov's rec. If you see on line 80, the $1,900,000 a year, that's a recognition that the attorney registration fee lapsed last year, and that's the equivalent that brought in. The governor's rec was $8,595,000. In the Senate, we just proportioned them out to salary and health insurance increases, caseload reduction, retention, and new hires. And we have Public Defense Corporation's base increase of $80,000 a year, transcript base increase of $200,000 a year. That will bring the transcript base up to $500,000 each year. And then finally, the Senate has a Senate-only provision on information technology staffing of $970,000. We move on to public safety, homeland and security and emergency management. And we have special revenue base of $1,208,000, environmental fund, one small position, $138,000, then a general fund base of $3,702,000. The governor has one decision item in Homeland Security, and that is the Minnesota School Safety Center. It's five positions. They coordinate safety protocols statewide. The House concurs with the governor's recommendation. The Senate, at the present time, we have no position, but that is it is tentatively funded in the transportation bill.
At the same level?
At the same level. The next page, Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, you see the various bases. $3,882,000 base for trunk highway funding of the labs, a general fund base of $80,540,000. Then you get to the governor's recommendations. The first recommendation is to replace the criminal history system. The criminal history system is what the local courts feed data to the BCA, and it's our criminal justice information system. The governor funded it with $160,000 in general fund and then $8 million in vehicle services fund from the special revenue or vehicle services account in the special revenue fund. The Senate has no position on this, and it doesn't have a position in the transportation bill either. The Senate did not fund this. The House funded the line at $5,630,000 in general fund money. However, I'll point out later on line 258 in the bill, the House has a $5 million transfer from the vehicle services account to the general fund, which I would imagine is related to this provision. Line 111, replacing the criminal reporting system. The history system gets local data to the BCA. The reporting system gets BC data to the FBI. The House has, the governor has a recommendation of $2 million from the vehicle services account and $720,000 from the general fund for the criminal reporting system. The House funds that at $2,720,000, all from the general fund. Next line, 14 and 15 forensic lab equipment, $125,000 each year from the general fund and $125,000 each year from the trunk highway fund for forensic lab equipment, $500,000 altogether. The House concurs with the governor's position. The Senate unofficial position is funds the general fund request at $250,000. Forensic staffing, which comes out to, if fully funded, two toxicologists and two chemists, $200,000 each year general fund and $200,000 each year trunk highway fund. The House concurs with that. Once again, the Senate's unofficial position is they fund the general fund line at $200,000 each year.
Then may I ask the members of the House, or maybe Senator Dibble, what has generated the BCA's or the increase in need for lab equipment and staffing?
Mr. Chair, take a stab.
Representative Paymar.
Go ahead.
Senator.
Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Dibble.
I actually got some information about that. To date, we haven't really known. We got some information about that. There's a couple of questions kind of still hanging out there. One is how much of the increased activity at the labs is attributable to the shutdown of the St. Paul lab? How much and how much is being picked up by St. Paul? And St. Paul also processed work from Dakota County and Ramsey County. How much activity is attributable to activity on the trunk highways, toxicology tests, breath tests, calibration activities, et cetera, and so those pieces that were attributable to trunk highway fund funding, how is that accounted for and allocated? I don't know if I mentioned wondering also if St. Paul or the other jurisdictions were helping pay for the existing work. I know that there's a proposal for prospective future work, but there is a big backlog at the labs presently. It's pretty sobering to hear about. And then there's a small matter of the fact that there's current statutory prohibition, outright, black and white language and statute saying that BCA crime lab costs are not an eligible trunk highway fund expense. So that was a decision that the legislature had made previously for a reason. In the budget submittal, there is a proposal to delete that language, but we had no real discussion about why we're deleting that language and kind of the rationale for looking to the trunk highway fund for this sort of investigatory activity, other sorts of activities in the public, in the criminal justice system that relate to crimes committed on highways, like prosecutors, defenders, court costs, and the like. Why aren't those eligible for the trunk highway fund? It's kind of a policy discussion that we just never were able to have in front of our committee. That being said, I don't need to, climb up on my high horse and be pure about this, but we needed some data. It just came. I literally just got it, and I haven't been able to synthesize or digest it.
Sure. Representative Paymar.
I just echo the St. Paul lab obviously caused a problem for the BCA. As I understand, there's like a 4 to 4.5 month turnaround time on getting some of this important lab analysis, which is not good. And the nexus, as I understand, actually is, at least in these two sections, on the lab equipment and lab staffing with the Trunk Highway Fund, is that the State Patrol makes use of this, which is under the Transportation Division, which is sort of a separate issue from the other two items on 108, 109, 111, 112. So,
Mr. Chair?
But Mr. Chair, before we end, too, I just So you're, I just want to make sure, so you're, because we have these unofficial positions then, so that when you say unofficial, so are you taking, have you taken a position on funding these? And so when I hear unofficial, I'm just trying to figure out what you're doing, because I realize the bill hasn't come up yet, so.
Senator DeBolt.
The bill is in taxes right now. So by official or unofficial, that means it hasn't been voted on by the full Senate yet. The bill as it is currently construed, however, Mr. Turner, remind me what position we take on the lab equipment and lab staffing. Do we do the general fund and not the trunk highway fund?
Mr. General, Senator Dibble, we did all of the general fund requests. We did trunk highway fund requests. We didn't.
Correct.
Representative Lovsch.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to get a good sense of, I mean, the information Senator Dibble just stated. I know that prior to the closure, we were looking at a 3.5 month wait at least for analysis of stuff that the BCA is now all doing, and now they're saying 4.5 months. So I'm not sure if I heard you, Senator Dibble. Did it say how much was directly attributed to that closure in your information?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to make copies of this email and then a memo. So we can do that in a minute here.
If it
but,
did, Mr. Chair,
but Mr. Chair, no, I mean, we had some testimony about the backlog has gotten much worse than that even now. You know, how much is attributable to the St. Paul closure is not clear on this, and it wasn't super clear from the testimony, but it's, you know, it's logical to assume that much of the backlog in the labs is attributable to the closure of the St. Paul lab. You know, and St. Paul wasn't just handling, like I said, St. Paul cases. They're also handling Ramsey and Dakota County cases. So it's pretty bad.
Representative,
we need to address this. It's just, you know, I've been asking for this data literally many times in my office and in committee in public, and I just got it today.
And I've asked for it too, Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator. I've asked for it too, and have gotten three different answers from three different sources. So I don't think anyone really knows, and those who maybe do know are saying different things. So I'm assuming there is some impact, absolutely, but the St. Paul lab did different things than what the BCA did. So I just want to be sure that we get accurate information based on the personnel that were lost from that and how much impact that has on the BCA. I just want it to be accurate is all I'm saying. And I don't think we have accurate info yet.
Representative Cornish.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, in defense of the BCA request, I think they've always had a backlog even before this crime lab with the St. Paul issue and evidence return. And I think that the longer that backlog goes on, it makes ripple effects in the judiciary and how we all operate in timelines. And the only problem with funding them out of the Trunk Highway Fund, I think, is in that what do we do about the thousands of tests that come in from the sheriffs and the police and security, everybody else that sends those in? Are we going to charge them back? And I've often thought that we shouldn't be charging anybody, to just take care of the state fund operation rather than charging for the processing of the evidence. And then I think some of that cost is in the live scan or the print scan, and that's really important too, especially with the background checks that we're all interested in at one form or another, and getting instantaneous results. So I think it's a valid request to increase the BCA funding.
Anything further on this line?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I completely agree with Representative Cornish. If things are this important, it's important for the agency to really show us the numbers and the rationale and the analysis. I mean, I keep hearing about how important things are, but then I don't get corresponding information that lets us make an intelligent decision.
Well, we will eagerly await that information before we wrap up a conference committee on this. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have a timeline by which you think you'll have an official position?
Senator Dibble.
I wish.
The short answer is no.
Yeah, early next week.
All right, Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, We left off on line 120, live scan fingerprinting maintenance. The governor had a recommendation of $699,000. The House concurs with the governor, and as does the Senate as it sits in the as the bill sits in the tax committee. Next line, data analysis and analytics. The governor had a recommendation of $3.5 million for that. Their description was a statewide data analytics center to provide a centralized, comprehensive, multi-agency information sharing network to assist local law enforcement and other public safety agencies. Neither the House nor the Senate concurred with that. Neither body funded it. Then we move on to the fire marshal. The governor, the House, and the Senate all provide straight base funding for the fire marshal. Gambling and alcohol enforcement, governor's rec was base budget. Senate and the House concurred, although they did pick up, this was an oversight from the bill last year that funded the Viking Stadium. There was enforcement efforts for pull tabs, for the electronic pull tabs, and this money was supposed to be in Gambling and Alcohol Enforcement Division's tails, and it wasn't. So both the Senate and the House appropriated those special revenue funds for that purpose.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't see on my spreadsheet that the Senate allocated a change. I see on line 139 on my spreadsheet that the House did it. I don't see it on the spreadsheet.
Is that unofficial?
That, again, is the unofficial source.
As it's in
the,
yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But it's the same number in the
yes.
current unofficial
yes.
bill.
Okay. That's the House.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner.
Members, then we move on to Office of Justice Programs on page 5. That's a base budget of $65,920,000. The governor had a recommendation of $3 million for various crime victim assistance programs. The House concurred with that recommendation, although the Senate is blank. The Senate, as it sits in the Tax Committee, concurs with that recommendation at $3 million as well. In addition to the $3 million for crime victim assistance, the House has a recommendation of $922,000 for youth intervention program grants. The Senate unofficial version or recommendation is $3 million for youth intervention. Then we have a House-only provision, community offender reentry, House File 1490 at $300,000. We have on line 151 local grants.
Sorry, Mr. Turner. For line 150, is the policy language in the House bill on this as well, or is that House file traveling separately?
Chair, there's no.
It's a rider.
There's the rider language.
Okay.
Mr. Turner. Members. Line 151 local grants for sex trafficking victim training. The House has. $375,000 each year and ongoing, I believe, as well. This is, in the Senate, it's a bill traveling by itself with Senator Pappas, and the Senate funds this at $300,000 the first year.
And where is the Senate funding contained?
The Senate fund, or Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner.
The Senate funding is contained in Senator Cohen's master budget. It is not in this budget. Being funded by itself at this point.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Paymore.
Mr. Turner, where's the money going?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner.
Representative Paymore, the Senate money goes to Ramsey County.
Okay.
Is that the same as
yes.
in the House?
It is.
Okay. So it's going to Ramsey County order to provide the statewide training, development, and training of the protocols and so on.
Mr. Chair, Ramsey County has been sort of a leader in this area and has already started working to develop a sort of a toolkit curriculum and are prepared to enhance that and will then be providing statewide training. And I don't know if this shows up here under the post board. I think it does later, but then there would be post money available to law enforcement to send people to these trainings conducted by Ramsey County. which shows up on line 179, I believe.
I see. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, then on lines 152 and 53, there's two Senate-only positions. Once again, they're in the transportation bill that's in the tax committee. We've got Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative, which I believe is $100,000 each year, and community safety de-escalation grants for training police officers at $50,000 each year.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could get some information about what they are and what they do and where the money goes, that would be helpful.
Will do. Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, then we go to Emergency Communication Networks. It has a base of $122,777,000. Senate and the House and the governor all agree on that funding. Then we move to administration and related services.
I'm sorry. Back up a second. I've got different information, I think, here.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please, Mr. Turner.
That is... well, I guess you could call it a typo. Originally, the governor asked for $1.6 million, and then there was some confusion mid-session. We were putting the budget together, and that $1.6 million, we found out, was actually part of the base. And it got included in the governor and the Senate request here. And when I went to change it, I've changed it back now in the master. But $122,770,000 is the proper number. If you add $1.6 million to that, you get $124,377. So that was incorrect. It's an incorrect number.
Okay, so line 159 under the Senate, FY14-15, should be the $122,777?
Correct. And the bill was correct as well. It was just in the spreadsheet. This error continued. All right. Then we move on to the Department of Public Safety pay increase of 1% each year. It's appropriated to the administration and related services, and it's $712,000 for the biennium.
Can I just ask one additional question I just thought of on this topic, which is, in this appropriation, is it indicated that it is, are there any restrictions on how that money is used? I mean, could it be used to supplement the contracts for salary increases, or is it specified that it is for non-compensatory related expenses? The other, Representative Hillstrom, I think, explained that the idea was if the contracts were fully implemented, there might be impacts in other areas of the budget. But is this appropriation proposed to be targeted toward one or the other, or is it left open?
Mr. Chair, the dollars are given to the agency essentially in the bill to use at their discretion, but it's meant to cover any inflationary needs that they may have, presumably insurance and salary inflation.
So additional salary supplements?
Mr. Chair, not beyond anything that's agreed to in the contracts.
Don't they already have to pay what's in the contracts?
Mr. Chair, they do, but without the agencies may have needs to, as far as retaining their complement or their FTEs, that they do not have the money to fund, and without or short of any additional money for inflationary needs, when people leave the agency through attrition, they may have to hold positions open and go without staff, without additional inflationary dollars, and that's the needs that the money is intended to address.
Yeah, was there testimony agency by agency on these needs? Because I know when we received testimony, for example, in the Department of Corrections, which I guess we'll get to shortly, they didn't indicate that they were having those issues. If we just funded their base budget, they would not have any cuts in complement.
Mr. Chair?
Is it not included?
No, it's not included.
It's not part of the Department of Corrections budget?
Yeah. $38 million is an initiative. It's not a...
All right. So, but these decisions weren't made agency by agency in terms of what specific issues they had within their budgets?
Mr. Chair, I believe the decision was made at the leadership level that there were several agencies that were receiving money for salary supplement through request to the governor, and it was treating agencies unequally, and that any agency that did not have money should get 1% to deal with inflationary needs.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can say that in the Judiciary Committee, we had each and every agency come before us, and many of them talked about the requests that they had made that were not included in the governor's recommendation, making it very clear which areas were not funded.
Good. And did you receive any feedback from the governor's office, whether they cared about the additional money above and beyond their budget in this line?
Mr. Chair, I have had conversations with the governor's office, and that was not one of the concerns they raised with me.
All right. Representative Cornish?
Well, I was just wondering if there was somebody from, or Mr. Chair, OMB here, or somebody from what used to be called Doer to help us out in this. I thought that the unions and the contracts weren't established until after the budget came out. Then they would find out if there is salary sups in there. I don't think that they appropriate money after the contracts are settled for a supplement over that. In fact, the agencies usually aren't allowed to ask the governor for more salary money than the salary sups. So I was just kind of wondering if OMB could kind of clear that up. But maybe in the future
whoever's watching, if you can make a note, maybe we can get some more information from that when we open up the floor for public testimony. Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, members, and we're on the post board. Post board has a base budget of $7,540,000. As Representative Paymar pointed out, the House bill has $100,000 in general fund money for police. It's training specific to sex trafficking victims. Reimbursement to local units of government, whereas the Senate is a general training reimbursement of $100,000 each year from the Special Revenue Fund.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a particular Special Revenue Fund that you take that from? We've just been talking about a couple of different Special Revenue Funds. I'm just curious as to which one.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, that would be the fund. The post board is funded out of the criminal and traffic surcharge, and they can get up to 39% of the first $25. And that was all 25 years ago. I don't think they're getting 39% now. I think they're getting about 32%, but they only get what we appropriate to them. For every dollar we give them in the special revenue fund, we have an offset in the back of the budget for the general fund, because that will be a dollar that will not flow to the general fund. What doesn't go to the post board, and there's a little bit that goes to the DNR out of that account on criminal traffic surcharges, goes to the general fund. So
Mr.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is there any other special revenue fund on this spreadsheet then that has that offset to the general fund that we've not explored yet?
Mr.
Turner.
Representative Hillstrom, not on the spreadsheet, no.
Mr.
Chairman, moving on to page 6, Private Detective Board, a base funding of $240,000, and then we have the small agency increase again of $1,000 first year and $2,000 the second. Human Rights Department, base funding of $6,336,000. The governor had recommends the hiring of two new enforcement officers. It's $129,000 a year. The House and the Senate both concurred with the governor's recommendation. And then in addition, on line 195, once again, the House has the small agency increase of $76,000 for the biennium. Then we move on to corrections. Corrections institutions has a base of $662 million. Then we move down into the decision items. Line 204, we've got treatment beds. chemical dependency in the Senate and sex offender in the House. They're funded at $1,300,000 each year in the Senate and $1,500,000 each year in the House. That money, well, money's fungible, so it doesn't really matter where it comes from, but basically that was later in the bill we'll see that we that both the Senate and the House took diverted money from the MinCorps revolving fund. The next line.
Mr. Chair, can I
Representative Paymore.
Just so we're clear, I mean, there was surplus money, Mr. Chair. Is that, we didn't take money from MinCorps. Well, I mean, we took money from MinCorps, but it was not, as I understand it, it was excess money in their fund. Is that correct? Just want to make sure.
Mr. Chair. Representative Paymore, it's my understanding that even, I think we've even got it in statute, that they can carry up to like $9 million in their revolving fund in order to do business. And yes, this was surplus of that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. Get further clarification. This was surplus of the $9 million or?
Yeah. Right. Over the $9 million. I think they had like $12 million or a little bit more than that total in their fund.
And do we take all of the difference over the $9 million, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Turner?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, the House only took $1 million here, and the Senate took $1,700,000 here, which I hear the department does not feel comfortable with this with the Senate transfer. If we could get some more information on exactly what their balances are, the House went conservative transfer of $2.6 million.
Did it all go into treatment costs?
Yeah.
Mr. Turner, a little clarification on that. The on line 204, it shows the House took $1.5 million per year, and it shows the Senate at $1.3 million per year.
I believe that's what they appropriated. But their transfer, Mr. Chairman, members?
To yep. Mr. Turner.
The House appropriated $1.5 million for this purpose. But if you look for the transfer itself, it's on page 8, line 256. The transfer was only $2.6 million. The appropriation was $3 million. And like I said before, money's fungible. It doesn't really matter where it came from. It's just that was at the time, you know, that was where we said we'd get the money. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
I just have a request. We're getting a lot of information here, and I would really appreciate if people would put their name on here, whoever is handing that out. I know members normally do that, but sometimes people from that are sitting here don't, and I really want to know who it's,
sure.
it's from.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. This is from me.
All right.
Out of my office at Senator Hillstrom's request on those two items under the Office of Justice program.
Okay. So. Let's just put our names on. It'll help me. Understand.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the statute says that the Department of Corrections can carry $9 million and they're carrying more than 12, can we actually get some testimony about under what authority then they're carrying more than the statutory allowed amount if you didn't take it off, Mr. Chair, at some point?
Yeah, certainly. If we didn't take any specific testimony on that, I'm not sure if the statute says they can only carry $9 million or they can carry at least $9 million. I guess we'd have to, maybe counsel can look that up for us.
That would be helpful, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner.
Members, then we move on to line 205. This is the major governor's initiative in the entire budget. It's $32,460,000 to the institutions division of the Department of Corrections for salary increases and health insurance increases.
So, Mr. Turner, this is the 3% each year plus the health insurance to
actually, Mr. Chairman, I believe it was a little more than 2% each year. This was as much as the governor was willing to give the department, and they said that they would, if they got this money, they'd be able to maintain their 4% vacancy rate, as I've got in the note there. But I don't think it was a 3%. I think it was a little less than that.
Okay.
2.2 and 2.
Okay, but we did have testimony that if we appropriated this amount, then the agency would not have to reduce its complement or by any staff. So this is a maintenance level to reflect their inflation. Is that correct, Mr. Turner?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, members, and it's important to note that both the Senate and the House concur with the governor at that level of $32.5 million. Next line is 207, Senate File 1241. It's a Senator Cohen bill traveling alone in the Senate. It carries some bed costs, carrying $12,000 the first year and $44,000 the second year. The House has an identical provision, House File 1010.
And where is House File 1010? Is that in the bill?
Yes.
It's in the bill. Okay. The next line, House File 142.
And just so members are clear, this is the bill that reinstated what was generally believed to be an inadvertent elimination of a statute relating to mandatory sentences for repeat sex offenders. So reinstating it carried some bed costs.
Mr. Turner? Chairman, members moved to line 208. House File 142, the enhancement of certain sex offender penalties. It did not pass the Judiciary Committee in the Senate. That was a Senator Schmidt bill. The House is carrying $12,000 in the second year, the biennium, in costs for this.
Okay, and so members know, in the Senate, this bill received a lot of discussion in the Judiciary Committee, and it was laid on the table by the committee. So our Senate position is it did not make it past the committee stage.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Paymar.
At some point, not today because we're crunched on time, but it would be, I think, helpful to hear from MnCASA on the content of the bill, if it's still open for, yeah, at some point I would like to have that happen.
Okay.
Not today.
Well, that's fine. We've already had some indication, though, it's going to be quite difficult, I think, for the Senate to take a House position where the bill was affirmatively laid on the table in the Senate committee. But we can certainly take testimony on what they have to say about it. Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, members, then moving to line 209, Senate File 235, another gun bill provision. The bill expands the definition of a felon in possession. There's some bed costs to that, and we're carrying $24,000 in the second year, and then there's with tails that follow.
And members, in case I didn't mention it earlier, the Senate File 25, the language, we're carrying the funding in the budget bill, but the language is traveling separately, and it's currently in the Senate Finance Bill as Finance Committee as a separate Senate file.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, if you could clarify, you said Senate File 25?
I'm sorry, 235.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, yes.
Senate File 235, the language, the policy language, has that been heard in the Senate Finance Committee yet, the policy language?
No.
All right. I didn't know, Mr. Chair, that we were going to take policy in the Finance Committee, but we occasionally do.
Senator Limmer, Senate File 235 does have fiscal impact, which is why it went to the Finance Committee in the first place. It just has not yet moved out of the Finance Committee.
All right.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm sure we'll have this, you know, conversation again on the guns, but any legislation whatsoever that we have with the word GUN in it is going to be highly controversial. And I don't think there's any appetite. I could be wrong. That decision hasn't been made yet, but for it to go anywhere, any gun bills. And so if that comes true, we might look at the money in these two sections to put for some worthy cause rather than where it is. It just doesn't seem like it's going anywhere. And there's a real fear of any gun bills floating around in the Senate or the House. So.
Representative Cornish, this particular line, the provision that has the bed impact is the provision that adds to the definition of crime of violence that would make a felon ineligible to possess guns. It adds felony strangulation, felony fifth-degree assault, and felony domestic assault, as well as some juvenile assault predicates as well, and it was part of the prosecutor's package that was recommended and introduced, I think, in both bodies. The other Senate file 235 language that was noted on the earlier in our discussion today, the recapture of the older civil commitment data and the codification or putting into the electronic databases the gross misdemeanor and certain other convictions were part of the NRA and Representative Hillstrom bill introduction on the Senate with Senator Ortman's introduction that contained all of those provisions as well, so that the existing database would be more complete. So whatever the scope of that, whoever is subject to a background check, that background check would be on databases that were more complete in their information. Those are the only provisions that are budgeted and funded in this budget bill. Just for your information.
Mr. Chair, I'm aware of that. Future negotiations would probably require signing in blood that nothing else would be attached to it. So.
Well, I guess we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But as I say, the funding is carried in here. The bill itself is currently in the Senate Finance Committee. And as I indicated, I thought those provisions anyway had pretty broad consensus on their merits. There was some question as to whether and how they could be funded. But I'm not sure that anyone's in a position to make any guarantees about future legislative pathways. But we can cross that bridge when we come to it, I suppose. Any other questions on that history? Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, members, then if we move to line 210, it's the Senate file 976, the Senator Hayden bill, the early release of nonviolent drug offenders from the Department of Corrections. It carries some savings, $120,000 for the biennium. You pointed out to me yesterday that Senator Cohen is also carrying this on his master list, so we'll have to take that into consideration on who carries it in the end when we get our target.
Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I believe that the it may require some checking, but I believe that the House bill did not make it out of the House Public Safety Committee.
That's correct.
Is it, Mr. Chair?
Senator Goodwin.
Representative Hillstrom, was it voted down or it just wasn't heard, or what was the issue?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Paymore.
I think Representative Rosenthal, who was the chief author, decided he did not want the bill heard. But we are double checking.
Thank you.
But, Mr. Chair, I would think that
this might
suffer the same consequence as the other bill that we have in our bill that you've said the Senate couldn't possibly accept, as it didn't make it out of committee.
Well, I guess we can have that discussion. I think there might be a qualitative difference as to whether or not it was considered and rejected or whether it was simply not considered. And it'd sure be nice if we could keep the savings. Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, members, the next five lines are all related, 211 to 215. Both the Senate and the House passed language that would make inpatient inmates eligible for Medicaid. And with that came tremendous savings to the state. It's essentially, we're making ourselves eligible for large pools of federal money. The differences are, in the Senate, the net savings was transferred to the CCA and CPO, Community Correction Act subsidy, and the CPO reimbursement. And in the House, the net savings are retained within DOC institutions and health services. As you can see, line 211, the House file, health services improvements, vacancy reduction. The next line is the savings. then the next line, two medical release planners are needed to implement this Medicaid program. Then you have the state DOC share for the Medicare. At first it's 50%, and I think it goes up to as high as 100% in some of the out years. And then the state agreed, both the House and the Senate agreed, to pay the county share of Medicaid. And although the numbers are proportioned differently, the main difference between the two is that the Senate sends its net savings to the counties, and the House retains them within DOC Institutions Health Services.
Mr. Turner, there's a different figure for the savings on line 212 between the Senate and the House.
Mr. Chairman, the House number is correct. The Senate number is conservative. When we put this amendment together, we got the fiscal note on Wednesday afternoon. We had amendment together for this morning, and we used the conservative figure in the net figure in the fiscal note. And so by doing that, we double counted. We paid twice in the Senate for the DOC state share and the two medical planners. So the Senate is actually carrying more savings than what it's showing here. But, of course, I'm not going to show that now because this is the way the bill is written. But we will have, when we come to conference, the Senate is actually retaining, because the savings are real, it's just not reflected in that number, $6,863,000. So the Senate actually has $1.6 million. It's being retained by DOC Institutions Health Services right now. And that error will be corrected in the first, in the next iteration of the bill. The spreadsheet has to reflect the bill as it passed.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question going up back a few lines? I apologize.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to line 210, I see that you're carrying the savings of Senate File 976. Is that a standalone bill, or is the language in the bill?
That's a standalone bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner.
That's it for institutions. If you go to page 7, we're on Community Services Division of the Department of Corrections. The Maine Governor's initiative, once again, is to maintain the 4% vacancy rate agency-wide, accelerating health insurance increases, $3,844,000. The Senate and the House both concur with the governor on that. Then, if you'll see, 224 and 225 are what I just talked about, the Medicaid savings. That's approximately $4 million that the Senate increased the CCA subsidy and the CPO reimbursement. Then in operation support, we had once again, the only initiative was the governor's initiative to maintain a 4% vacancy rate, $1,696,000, and the Senate and the House concur with that. And finally, we have sentencing guidelines, base budget of $1,172,000. Governor recommended $300,000 the first year for an electronic sentencing worksheet, and the Senate and the House agreed. In addition, there's a House-only base adjustment of the small agency salary increase of $5,000 and $10,000 each year. Then, Mr. Chairman, we have totals by fund. And then on the back page, we have revenue adjustments. As mentioned earlier, we list the MnCorp transfer to the general fund, $2.6 million of the House, $3.4 million of the Senate. Then we have the post board adjustment to the general fund from the Senate position that I mentioned earlier. Then House-only provisions, a vehicle services account transfer to the general fund of $5 million. The bond reinstatement fee, which raises $259 million. Then, pardon? Thousand. Sorry. Sorry about that. Then criminal traffic surcharge increase of $15 from $75 to $90. That raises $12,993,000. And finally, conciliation court graduated fees, which raises $3,984,000. And so although the House had a target, had a target that was about $17.2 million below the Senate, they made up for it with fee increases. And finally, I guess we've got other revenue revenue adjustments from other funds. I think the main item there, which the House can explain when we come to it in the bill, is the court technology fee of $2. And it creates a special revenue fund account with $5.6 million in it, and it's statutorily appropriated. That, Mr. Chairman, is the spreadsheet.
Okay. Do any members have any additional questions about the spreadsheet before we move on to the side-by-side? All right. Let's move on to the side-by-side.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll very quickly go through Article 1 in the side-by-side. It basically, it implements the spreadsheet. It implements just what we've been going over for the last hour. I'll point out a few riders that I think deserve some attention, and if you have any questions, please ask. Starting on page R1, Section 1 in both bills, it's the summary of appropriations. Section 2 is basically the format of the bill, how the appropriations take place. Section 3, we start with the Supreme Court. Subdivision 2 is the contingent account. That's in every 2 years. It's very standard language. It's identical in both bills. Then we have the state share of the judge's pension. If you remember, the Senate is carrying that. We will have three riders reflecting the state share, one in the Supreme Court, one in appeals, and one in district court. On page R3, we have we're into the civil legal services appropriation, and that's a standard rider for legal services to low-income clients and family law matters. Transfer $877,000 each year for that purpose. I believe that, I may be wrong, but I believe the House writer should read $917,000 to reflect the spreadsheet, but I'm not sure. Court of Appeals, once again, the pension fund contributions, and then we've got tails on the House side, tails for the appeals court judicial reimbursement. Tails of $69,000 and $89,000 in the next biennium. We go on to trial courts. The House rider appropriating $925,000 each year for to develop, expand, and maintain specialty courts. There's no Senate provision. Then once again, the Senate provision on the pensions on page R4, the state share for district court judges. Tax court, what the Senate did was just spell out the governor's request for law clerks, CLE costs, and Westlaw costs. And then there's the Senate has a small rider for the case management system at $25,000 each year. House and the Senate both addressed the back dues under Uniform Laws Commission. Board of Judicial Standards, these are identical on page R5. They are standard riders that we use every 2 years. A standard deficiency rider, and then the major disciplinary actions we have in every 2 years for special investigation and hearing costs. Then you go to the Board of Public Defense. The Senate language has riders identifying information technology staffing, public defense corporation base increase, and a transcript base increase. And the House side, their transcript provision states that from the total appropriation, the board shall pay all outstanding billings as of June 30th, 2013, for transcripts. And there's a rider on the House side to provide for that.
Representative Hillstrom.
Mr. Chair, did you information technology, whether or not this was allocated for technology, covers the Board of Public Defense's costs related to this biennium?
Representative Hillstrom, I believe that we got the figure from the Public Defense Board that this was to be sufficient. I don't recall if it was formally in testimony or not, but the number came from them as to what they needed. I read about that, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
That's where you got it.
That's what I remembered, Mr.
Okay.
Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, real quickly, moving over to R6, stylistic differences only in the sentencing guidelines worksheet. Then we move on to Representative Paymar's bill, and you have the summary by fund, public safety appropriations bill format. And now this isn't going to be very useful because there's no Senate position for DPS. But we've got the House position, and just I want to point out the on page R9, the $604,000 each year from the fire safety account. That's a standard rider that's been in for the last, I believe, 8 years. Then you've got the first governor's initiative, the school safety center, on the House side, and then moving down, all it does is. It implements what we went over with on speaking about the BCA about an hour ago, the money for we've got the trunk highway fund base from 3.10 to 3.12, then the criminal history system request from the vehicle services account and with a little bit from the general fund, and then the criminal reporting system request with the vehicle services account and a little bit of general fund money. Then you have the language that implements the forensic lab equipment from the trunk highway fund and the general fund. On page R12, you have $200,000 each year from the general fund, $200,000 from the trunk highway fund for forensic lab staffing. The live scan rider, $310,000 the first year, $389,000 the second. And then we have a base adjustment for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Increased the base by $3,470,016, and it's decreased by $643,017. And Mr. Chairman, I don't know for sure what this does, but I think it might have something to do with funding the criminal history and reporting next biennium. Is that correct?
Under the House?
Line
5.5?
Yeah.
You're referring to?
Yeah.
Mr. Walls?
Mr. Chair, that is a rider that is for the criminal, I believe the criminal history system, and this was to, it's not exactly the same numbers as was suggested in the governor's budget. There's a little more money moved into 2016, and this rider may need some adjustment in the future.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turner.
And moving down, there's the...
Sorry, I just said that.
Representative Paymar.
I believe that this has to do with the fact that this is a, if I'm not mistaken, this is a four-year project to develop this, so that's where the, I don't know if that'll be a tails adjustment or what, but that's why this number is the way it is.
So this is not the salary supplement-based mm-hmm. adjustment that we see in other places, right?
I believe so.
Okay. That's a four-year program, and that. So, were these funds intended to last for 4 years? Is that the idea? Fund it all up front?
Well, I don't think so.
Just writing it. So that.
Go ahead and explain this one.
Mr. Chairman, members, if I
get Turner.
It correctly, you're just increasing the base so that MMB funds this program in the next biennium. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Mr.
Walls?
Turner, that is correct. The rider provides some additional one-time money to the agency to complete the computer system in the next biennium and then make sure that money then goes away and is not continued.
Thank you. Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, members, just continuing on then, we've got the $5 million transfer from the Vehicle Services Special Revenue Account to the General Fund. Fire Marshal is just standard Fire Marshal appropriation language. Alcohol and gambling on page R13. You've got a base funding rider from the Alcohol Enforcement Account. There's a each year there's a there has been a $100,000 transfer to the general fund. That's standard. Then we've got the rider that was the $200,000 each year for pull tab enforcement that was added in both bills. Down at the bottom of R13, OJP administrative costs, that's a standard rider that's used every 2 years. Just straight riders for what was appropriated, $500,000 each year for crime victim programs, $150,000 each year for community offender reentry programs, the youth intervention programs, appropriation language. Then the sexually exploited youth goes on. That one goes on all the way to the next page. It appropriates $370,000 on an ongoing basis to the Ramsey County Attorney to develop a statewide model policy, conduct statewide training, and develop and disseminate investigative best practices relating to sexually exploited youth. And we continue on to page R16, emergency communication networks. This is straight implementation language out of the governor's bill. We appropriate the money from the 911 emergency account, and then we have the various riders for PSAPs, medical resource communication centers, armor debt service, and armor state backbone operating costs.
Okay, Mr. Turner, the House has to go vote. So members of the House will wait for you. Hurry up.
But not for you, Tony.
We'll recess for a few minutes until the House members return so we can turn off the tape.